I took a science course in my undergrad years called Human Ecology. It was about the science of how human beings live together. I remember one of the experiments well. We put a few tiny fruit flies into a jar and observed what happened. And then we took another jar and we put more fruit flies in and observed what happened. And then we took another jar and put a lot of fruit flies in it and observed what happened. The point of the experiment and what we observed was that the more fruit flies that you put in a contained space, the faster they fly. Of course, this is a metaphor for what's happening in our urban centers as the population density increases. The density pressure is influencing people to fly faster, move faster, do more in shorter periods of time. In Singapore, in New York, in Delhi, and Tokyo, these cities and many more, they just never stop now. Lights never dim, restaurants never close, transportation never pauses. In 1800, only 3% of the world population lived in cities. Life was much slower in those days. In 2016, 54% of the Earth's population now lives in urban centers. That is 3.9 billion human beings buzzing faster and faster. All those buzzing billions require food, shelter, and light, and all those buzzing billions require stuff. And all that stuff ends up somewhere. The Conference Board of Canada issued a report in 2013 which measured air pollution, garbage production, energy consumption, water usage, and many other factors across 17 developed nations around the world. Can you imagine? Can you guess where Canada ranked out of 17? Near the bottom. 15 out of 17 at the bottom. While Canada earned A grades in categories such as water quality, endangered species, and the use of forest resources, overall our country ranked a dismal D average. In 2009, the year the data was collected, Canada produced 777 kilograms of garbage per person. More than twice as much garbage as per person than Japan, the best country on the ranking in that particular category, which made only 377 kilograms of garbage per person. That's a lot of stuff, right? That's equivalent, just in weight, okay, in weight of 1.5 grizzly bears, or polar bears, because they're about the same, or a smart car with 2 hefty passengers. We fill up our busy lives with stuff. And I have a confession to make. I have a, like, love-hate relationship with stuff. This past year, I had an opportunity to get to know the heavier side of stuff in quite an intimate way. When the father of my children, Eric, died, and then a few months later my mother died, our family was left with 2 lifetimes of stuff to go through and to make decisions about. I hear the groans and the responses. So some of you in this crowd today know what I'm talking about. This has certainly allowed me to have a lengthy meditation on the things of life that we surround ourselves with, the motivations, and also the values that we put on our things. Eric and Joy were similar in that they both had apartments that were filled with stuff, but the motivations behind those things were quite different. Eric was the kind of person who didn't want to throw anything out because one day it would be useful. He had a lot of tools and things that go with tools. He had jars and boxes of nails. We're talking about a variety of kinds of nails for different usefulnesses, you know, wide-headed nails, stainless steel nails, copper nails. He had hammers and skill saws and sheets of plywood and chunks of marble for the day when they would be useful. He made furniture, and he was a sculptor and a general fix-it-up-and-build-it kind of guy. So things for Eric always had usefulness. Now, his technology gadgets were slightly a different story. They had their new usefulness for sure, but the motivation to acquire them was slightly different. Because Eric, he really wanted to have the newest, the fastest, and the shiniest technology. They had justifiable usefulness, but the motivation, that need to have, was based on, you know, I guess I could say greed, but that doesn't actually go to the root of what I think the motivation was. I think it was a deeper need, a need to fulfill a loneliness or an emptiness in him, and also a need to stay connected. These things are complicated. Now, my mother, on the other hand, loved beautiful things. She collected pottery and paintings and sculptures, art lamps, and people. She loved presents. She loved giving presents. She loved receiving presents. And because she was loved by many people, her friends brought her beautiful things. And every beautiful thing was connected to a special person or a special event that had great meaning imbued in this object. She had a philosophy that if you were about to do something risky or very difficult for you, and you had the perfect Feuchtbinder, it would help you get through. Feuchtbinder is a name that she created, as far as I know, for that special, almost magical object that would get you through those difficult moments. So she had a lot of Feuchtbinders, both given and received. She also valued family. So every photo, every letter, ribbon, and award was packed away for the next generation. I have found her diary that she wrote at 13 describing her first cigarette. And also, a few pages later, she describes her arrival in Canada on a boat from Scotland during the Second World War, coming up the St. Lawrence and seeing Quebec City for the first time and explaining in it how amazing the trees were. They were so many trees, it looked like a huge hedge. Because in Scotland, of course, there weren't a lot of big trees. These are invaluable things. There's also love letters that my father sent her and crayoned birthday cards from her children. These are the stuff of our lives. We surround ourselves with things for so many different reasons, perhaps to fill our empty hearts or because our hearts are so full already, overflowing with love and appreciation. We keep our stuff. The things that we save and surround ourselves with can have great meaning and connect us to our history and our culture, and they can bring beauty into our lives. But when we go, whether it's moving on to another place or when we die, decisions by those we leave behind will need to be made about our stuff. And one person's stuff, however deeply meaningful or useful it might be, may not be as useful or as meaningful to the next generation. So Canadians, who apparently love their stuff more than any other nation in the world and are drowning in overpackaging and overconsuming and from a tradition of giving things that are wrapped around expressions of love and meaning, are leaving it all to the next generation to deal with. And we're literally running out of room to put all this stuff. This community is running out of room to put its stuff. This Beacon community, we've been using the Lunderville's basement for decades to store all those important pieces of paper and memories. They have in there, luckily they have a very large basement, but we're filling it up. We have everything from soup, lunch, cutlery, to cassette recordings of decades of Sunday services. Yes, lots of obsolete technology rearing its head. So right now, two board members, John Hagen and Rob Warner, have volunteered to start sorting through all of this and making all those difficult decisions on what to digitize, what to save, and what to recycle. Well, personally, I'm failing at simplicity when it comes to stuff. But I haven't given up yet, and I don't want the Beacon community to give up yet either. In my place, every storage room or storage space, every wall, every surface in my home holds what was once important to Eric and Joy. Even after many careful decisions, the important and meaningful things that belong to Eric and Joy have now found their way to my home. And I hope one day in the future that I will live in an environment that is almost empty. But I really don't know how realistic that will be. Because I must confess, I am my mother's daughter. And I love beautiful things. And I love things that have deep meaning to me, to my family, and my history. And I love to see them around me. I am failing at simplicity when it comes to the inner stuff as well. Those busy fruit flies inside of me are inside of me as much as outside of me. For the thoughts and the feelings and the impulses inside of me that are all about do, do, do. Doug Kraft, in his story, Skipping Stones, describes how when he was a kid, he liked to skip stones along the lake. And if he threw a flat stone at the correct angle with enough speed and energy, it would kiss the surface of the water and leap into the air again and again. And he says, if we have too much stuff in our lives, our attention skips from one object to another without really enjoying anything. If we have too many activities, our attention jumps from past to future without settling here in the present. If we have too many opinions, we end up thinking about how things should be without really and fully seeing how things are. Happiness and ease flow from the bottom of the lake. They aren't found hopping along the surface of life. We have to slow down enough to settle into our depths. Ease and joy are simple and uncomplicated. Having lots of things to do, stuff to manage, places to go, and opinions to consult make life complicated. Practices that cultivate simplicity do two things. They reduce the amount of stuff, activities, and preferences, so we have a better chance of settling into the present. They get the outward to resonate a little better with the happiness, the joy, and ease in our depths. And they help us become more aware of our relationship to stuff, to experiences, and our own thoughts. Practices that cultivate simplicity are really and should never be complicated. Just sit and look out the window. Come to a full stop at the stop sign for one whole breath. Do everything a little bit slower. Pay attention to this moment. Socrates is reported to have said, "The unexamined life is not worth living." And I would add, the unexamined stuff in our lives, both the inner and the outer, needs to be examined. Tomorrow is the spring equinox and the perfect time to start sorting through what is important and what is superfluous in our lives. It's a perfect opportunity to open the doors and the windows of our lives and let the fresh spring wind blow through. A perfect opportunity to take a few minutes and declutter our homes and our hearts and our minds. And change failing at simplicity into the incredible power of contentment. So be it.